Blog Talk Radio.
3, 2, 1. Hello, everyone. I'm Simon Applebaum. Simulcasting live from New York on Blog Talk Radio, Spreaker, and TuneIn Radio, and present on the iHeartRadio Podcast Network, Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music, Verbal, and Reason. This just in, tomorrow will be televised. Great to have you with us this Friday afternoon, and joining us live from Los Angeles in an InterRadio exclusive, the co-showrunner of NBC's brand new adventure saga, La Brea, premiering this coming Tuesday night at 9:10 East Pacific Time, David Applebaum. David, welcome in.
Hey, Simon, how are you? Thanks so much for having me.
It is a pleasure to have you, and just to bring everybody at ease, no, we're not related. David has his last name spelled L. Mine is L-E, as in the fruit. David's going to be with us for the first 20 minutes, so our first 20 minutes is going to be commercial and promo free. If you have a question or comment for David, give us a call, 646-652-2906. That's 646-652-2906. Numbers good anyway. You're catching us across the country, around the globe, here on Blog Talk Radio, Spreaker, TuneIn Radio. Or use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. You'll find it at our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. You can have other people come into the conversation through Facebook timeline. Click on the Facebook icon, your Blog Talk Speaker, TuneIn screen, follow the instructions. Other people will be live with you. We'll have news notes at the bottom of the hour. We'll tell you who our other guests are. We have a big 90-minute show ahead for you later on in the program. David, what's it been like for you and your fellow showrunners, Stephen Lillian and Brian Winbratt, to realize, hey, our creation is going to be one of the first shows kicking off NBC's fall season?
You know, it's surreal. You know, this has been a project that has been in gestation for over 2 years. You know, I pitched it to NBC in September 2019. We started shooting a pilot, and then we were shut down by the pandemic. But, you know, we've kept momentum going all this time. And, you know, now to finally be here, less than a week away, it's fantastic. It's really an honor. You know, NBC has been, you know, so supportive of us during the process. And, you know, we've all worked so hard, and we just can't wait to, you know, for the world to see it.
The premise is very simple, David. A sinkhole all of a sudden sinks a good chunk of Los Angeles. It takes half of a family with it, along with a lot of other people. How did you come up with the premise? What inspired it?
You know, it really just started with an image of a sinkhole opening in the middle of Los Angeles. And it was an image that I had never really seen before depicted on television or film, and it just kind of stuck with me, and I couldn't shake it. And I started just to construct a story around it by asking questions. You know, why does the sinkhole open up? Where does it lead? Who are the people that fall in? And then, you know, once you start to do that, more and more questions start occurring to you. And after a while, you start to build a world of a TV show. And, you know, but it's just sort of the inspiration was really just an image, but then a painstaking process of building out a context for a show, you know, after that.
What's the most painstaking part of the process?
That's a good question. You know, it's all of it is a challenge. All of it is a lot of fun. I would say it's probably just that first draft of writing a script. Once you have that, you know, you have an idea and you're just staring at that blank page, and it's just you and the computer, and you've got to start somewhere. You know, because there's so many different places that you can go. But I think that, you know, that moment alone, when you're in front of the computer, for me at least, is the most painstaking part.
Mm-hmm. This is a program that really has two sides to it, because number one, you're dealing with how does this city bounce back from this sinkhole, and secondly, you have the world underneath the sinkhole, whatever that world is. So when you are dealing with these parallel storyline, how do you make sure that from episode to episode, among you, your fellow co-showrunners, the cast, the crew, the writers, how do you try to balance out these two important plot lines?
You know, we usually stick to a mix of about two-thirds of the story taking place in the world down below, which is what we call the place where everyone has fallen through the sinkhole. And then about a third as takes place in modern Los Angeles. In that world down below, there's a much larger ensemble cast of characters. The focus of the series is this family. Half the family falls into the sinkhole. Half of the family stays above in modern Los Angeles. But the family who falls in, they're surrounded by this disparate group of people who are all trying to figure out where they are and how they're going to survive. So there's just a lot more story to play in that world down below. So that's usually the breakdown. It's about two-thirds down below and about a third up top.
When you're casting a program like this, because obviously you're going to have a lot of cast because you have a family involved and you have guest stars too, how did you cast the roles? How did you cast the family? What were you shooting for?
You know, first we started with the role of Eve. And, you know, she is such an important figure because she is an every woman. She's a mom of two kids, but she's also someone who is thrust into this incredible adventure and has to take on a leadership role, has to endure physical challenges, has to go through emotional ordeal. So it's really a part that, you know, it demands a lot of an actor. So that was, you know, we really started with that part, you know, trying to find who was the best person. It was a really intensive search, and we landed on an actress, Natalie Z, who's just fantastic. She's been in lots of dramatic shows. Audiences might recognize her from Justified. She's also has a huge body of comedic work. She's someone who can really do it all and really carries the show in this fantastic way. So it really started with just the role of Eve. But then on the other side, there's the other main lead, the person who's carrying the show up above is the role of Gavin, the father. And that's played by Owen Mackin, who's this fantastic Irish actor who was a star of an NBC show called The Night Shift for many years. And similarly, it's a part that demands a lot. He's someone who's going through a lot of turmoil in his life. He's at a crossroads in his life, but he's faced with this epic challenge of trying to figure out what happened to his family and how to bring them home. So it's really a heroic part, but also a family man. So it's, you know, it's also a role that demanded a lot. So it was really those two parts that we were focused on in the beginning. But we actually have 13 series regulars. So it's a diverse cast of characters. And the casting process, we looked all over the world for some of these parts. And it was really an intensive process that took, you know, many months. But I think we landed on this really interesting cast that I think, you know, audiences are really going to fall in love with.
Yeah. I'm going to go back to how you make sure that as diverse a cast you've got gets their time, you know, to bring their storylines to life in a minute. But one person that I also wanted to bring up beside Natalie Z is John Stade. A lot of people know him, of course, from Chicago PD. You see the reruns all over the place now on USA Network. And by the way, Chicago just had its latest season start this past Wednesday on NBC. So far, so good, number one the time period, by the way. John is, it's sort of in a way a similar role. Because he's playing a heroic character, although it's not as gritty or contemporary as it was in Chicago PD, not the Dick Wolf kind of thing.
Yeah, John plays the part of Sam Velez, who's one of the people who falls into the sinkhole and finds himself in this strange world. And he's one of the people who really take on a leadership role amongst the people who are down there. He's a former Navy SEAL. He's also a surgeon. He's someone who people come to rely on as they try to figure out what happened and how they're going to survive. But he's also, you know, most importantly, and this is something that's a little bit different for John than his role in Chicago PD, is he's a dad. He falls down there with his daughter, Riley. And a lot of the show and their personal arc is about their own relationship. So John really has a lot to do in the show. And he's just a fantastic actor. He's a real professional. He's been doing this for so long. Always comes prepared and, you know, just nails every single scene that he's in. And, you know, coming from, you know, the Dick Wolf camp and all the Chicago shows, he's just someone who knows how to deliver every time because he's been doing it for so long. He's really an invaluable addition to the cast. But, you know, we really have so many different, you know, each of these different 13 core series cast members all have their own unique personalities. So, it is a tricky balance every week trying to find stories for all of them. There's always going to be – the center of the show is always this family and how they're trying to get back to each other and their emotional stories between them. But there's also, you know, all these other characters who have their own mysteries and their own stories. And, you know, not everyone gets a chance to shine every episode because, you know, then we need 2 hours an episode. But we pick our spots, and they all have interesting arcs over the course of the season.
Yeah. When NBC had a press tour featuring your series, you mentioned at the time joined by some of the cast members, that the show is shot in Australia. If it wasn't for the pandemic, was there a possibility that you would have done the show in L.A.?
You know, it really never got to that point. You know, we were shooting originally in Vancouver for the pilot, and we were shut down in the middle of it, and never really had a chance to ponder, you know, what the series would look like at that time. But then once shooting started picking up post pandemic, you know, really made a lot of sense for us to go to Australia. You know, in part because, you know, the show takes place in this primeval world, and so much of it is about these beautiful, epic landscapes of the natural wonder. And Australia really offers that in a great way. So, you know, when you watch the show, it really takes place in this beautiful, majestic world that, you know, once you get outside the cities of Australia, it's really, you know, an amazing place to see.
We are speaking with David Applebaum. He is one of the co-showrunners of La Brea. It's NBC's brand new adventure saga, and it premieres next Tuesday night at 9, 10 Eastern and Pacific time. He joins us live from Los Angeles this half hour on Tomorrow Be Televised. Happy you're with us on this Friday afternoon, wherever you may be. Simon Applebaum with you live from the other side of the U.S. of A., New Weather, York. And we invite you to be part of the program. Give us a call, 646-652-2906. Or use the chat room, SimonApple041. Coming up on our next half hour, we'll speak with one of the key content people at CuriosityStream, one of the first major services to make its way to you through smart TV sets and smart devices. They've got a lot of things currently and coming up in the future in the fire. And our final half hour, at the top of the hour, we will feature the Plumbing Vice President of Quant TV. It's a brand new service just launched on the Roku channel in both the U.S. and Canada. It comes from Canada. It's all about the world of the paranormal. We'll speak with Craig Jenner, the Plumbing Vice President. He comes up at the top of the next hour. David, when you're trying to create this world underneath the sinkhole, was there anything that you and your writers could fall back on? Because we've had all sorts of shows throughout the history of television dealing with people and new environments, A Lost in Space, The Land of the Giants, episodes of Star Trek where the Captain Kirk and crew are landing on a distant planet. Was there anything that you and your crew could work with in terms of creating the world under the sinkhole?
You know, we took inspiration from a lot of different sources. You know, certainly one of them is the TV show Lost, which is a show that we all love. You know, and it's about, you know, part of it is about this, you know, this group of people who are trying to survive in an inhospitable place. That Lord of the Flies type of story is something that really appealed to us. But it's also, you know, another component of Lost that was inspiring is like the mystery of what this world is, which we're also trying to bring to our show. Now, granted, you know, we take the story in a much different direction, you know, as far as what this place is and who the characters are. But certainly, you know, if you like a show like Lost, if you like a show, you know, about action and adventure, but also, you know, really about understanding who these characters are and understanding the mysteries behind them and also greater mysteries of the world that they're in, I think, you know, you're someone who really would like La Brea.
Mm-hmm. Talk more about how you came up with the idea with the family of having mother and son be separated from father and daughter. Did you and your people work with different combinations of the family in terms of, who stays in L.A. and who goes into the sinkhole?
You know, that was always the idea. From the genesis of the idea, it was going to be this divide where the mother and son fall in and the father and daughter stay behind. And really came from, I'm someone who loves action and adventure movies. You know, this show is, inspired also a lot by, like, my love of Spielberg movies, Jurassic Park and Indiana Jones and those fun adventure stories. But all of those movies, you know, I think what makes Spielberg movies great is that there's always this emotional core at the center of them that makes the audience really care. You know, E.T., it's about, you know, this broken family. You know, you find that in all of his adventure movies. And that's something that I knew was important for a show like this. So putting the family at the center of this show, having them be divided and wanting them to be reunited and it being about this emotional journey for them, always knew that we needed that emotional context for the show for it to make it work. Because as much as you have, like, cool special effects, which this show has in spades, it really isn't going to land in a significant way unless you really have that emotional core behind it.
Incidentally, when you have your cast deal with, especially the people down below, deal with this unique world, do they get any coaching about how you act, if you're using green screen or using motion capture or whatever the technique is to put the world in with them, how they act, how they try to bring out, you know, bring out the story you want them to bring out?
It's the most important thing when you're acting with green screen or knowing that there are special effects around you is just to try to remain as naturalistic as possible. So that's what, you know, we've had some great directors on the show, just trying to make them feel like they're actually in this world as much as possible, setting the context for them, putting as much real-life props and scenery around them as possible, because you want to, you know, even though there's fantastical animals and, you know, crazy things happening through the visual effects, what's always important is that they're grounded in the reality of the moment and knowing that and feeling like a normal person would if you were thrust into a crazy situation like this. Because if you're acting, you know, if you're outside of that, you know, the audience can, you know, it can keep the audience outside of the story.
Yeah. You're doing this with Keshet, the Israeli-based production studio that's responsible for so many great shows like Homeland and others, either shows that were produced specifically for U.S. television or were adapted from Israeli, like Homeland was from Prisoners of War. What's it been like with working
That's
right. with Keshet, and what do they bring to your table?
Oh, it's been fantastic. And Keshet I've actually worked with for years. They produced another television show that I wrote for called Wisdom of the Crowd. And they were actually the first people that I knew I wanted to bring this idea to. Peter Traugott and Rachel Kaplan and Asher Lande at Keshet are the producers who I'm working with most closely there. And, you know, they're someone who has their company that has a great relationship with NBC. And I knew that this show was something that would work really well for NBC. So, you know, having this, you know, prior relationship with Keshet and also knowing that they have a great relationship with NBC made it kind of, you know, a really clear choice of who I wanted to work with. But they just, you know, they've produced so many shows and they bring a wealth of experience into production. And producing, a show on this scale, which is really an epic scale, you need, you know, really seasoned producers behind you who can, you know, help guide you through any situations that come up, because these are all of them.
Yeah. You know, the late, great movie critic Roger Ebert used to talk about something called the idiot plot or the outlandish plot. The way he described it was movies that either had a plot line that was incredibly outlandish or characters incredibly outlandish, that if either the plot was realistic or the story or people acted the way they were supposed to act, the film would be over in 10 minutes. How do you, as La Brea goes on, how do you try to make the series creatively work, but at the same time not to sort of go too far out in terms of behavior or too far out in terms of how people would deal with a crisis like this?
You know, for every story we construct, we always try to ground it in real character emotions. You know, the pilot episode, it's about the group of people fall into this sinkhole and they land in this strange world. But immediately, the story that takes over is that the son in the family, the character Josh, he's injured and mortally injured, and his life is hanging in the balance. And the story becomes about how this mother, Eve, tries to keep her son alive. So even though, we're putting the story in a fantastical setting, it's always important that we find plots that focus on real, understandable human emotions that anyone can relate to. So, that's just one example in the first episode. But in every episode, we're trying to ground it in that kind of way.
Mm-hmm. What's the most exciting thing for you and your fellow showrunners about getting this show on the air, and in terms of what you hope the viewers learn or how the viewers follow what you're doing?
Yeah. I think one of the really cool things is that this is a show that's going to air 10 consecutive weeks, starting Tuesday, 10 weeks in a row. And, though so much television is viewed through binges and, consecutively, and I think the show that we've designed is really in that spirit, where every episode is ending with a cliffhanger, where you're going to need to know what happens next. And the audience is really going to be given that opportunity because they're not going to have to wait weeks and weeks in between episodes. You're going to get hooked in that first episode through the action and the adventure, but also tapping into, you know, these great characters and the emotional conflict and, you know, this family really at the core of it. And the next week, you know, you're going to get answers to what you were hoping to see in the week before. So it's, I think it's, you know, it's really going to be binge-worthy, exciting television that people will be able to latch onto.
You won't have to wait to see the start of La Brea because it comes at you on your local NBC station this coming Tuesday night, 9 p.m. Eastern Pacific Time. Check your local for the NBC station in your area. And for more details about the program online, NBC.com. David Applebaum, co-showrunner of La Brea, thank you again for joining us. We really appreciate the time. Good luck with to you, your cast and crew. And hopefully Tuesday night is the beginning of a wonderful long run.
Thanks so much, Simon.
You're welcome, David. Take care. Enjoy the weekend. David Applebaum joining us live from Los Angeles right here on Tomorrow Be Televised. And before we go any further, we want to let you know that we originally were going to try to have the other two co-showrunners of the program, Stephen Lillian and Brian Winbrand, on the show. Unfortunately, because of logistical situations involving communication, we could not get them on. But we wish them, along with David, the very, very best in having a long run with this series. And again, La Brea, Tuesday night, 9:10 Eastern Pacific Time on NBC. And now before we go any further, let's give you the latest news notes. The View suddenly went from 5 co-hosts to 3 this morning when Anna Navarro and Sonny Huston learned they had positive coronavirus test results. Both Navarro and Huston were directed at mid-show to leave The View's New York set, moments before a much-publicized segment with Vice President Kamala Harris. Because of the positive test results, Harris did the segment in a separate New York studio, speaking with co-hosts Sarah Haynes and Joy Behar. At this hour, it's unclear how long Navarro and Huston will be absent from The View. Modest viewer turnout Wednesday night for the premiere of ABC's The Wonder Years Reset. That's ABC's The Wonder Years Reset and Avatar-minded competition Alter Ego on Fox. More than 3 million people saw The Wonder Years, running fourth in the time period among broadcast networks. Alter Ego came third in its time slot, reaching 2.9 million viewers. Incidentally, in recent weeks, we have interviewed the executive producers of both programs, from Alter Ego, Matilda Zosky, and then last week, in fact, a week ago, we had Saladin K. Patterson on the program. If you want to catch those interviews, go to our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. That's exclusive interviews with the executive producers of both Alter Ego and The Wonder Years. Now some quickies. Teen Wolf TV series creator producer Jeff Davis is developing a Wolfpack scripted show for Paramount Plus. That's under a brand new Chrome development deal he just signed with that mega content service. Teen Wolf launched in 2011 on MTV and ran for 6 seasons, and there's talk that perhaps Paramount Plus may do, with Davis, a Teen Wolf reunion movie with many of the original cast. Russell T. Davies will return as Doctor Who's showrunner. Davies oversaw Who's switch from half-hour videotape to filmed-hour format in 2005 and left to produce other series 4 years later. Patricia Arquette will star and direct in a Showtime miniseries about the Love Canal chemicals controversy in the late 1970s. Discovery Channel has an early 2022 launch plan for Hoffman Family Gold. That's revisiting Alaska miner and gold rush subject Todd Hoffman. And in the last half hour, NBC, yes, we have another NBC story for you, gave thumbs up to a revival of Night Court, with Emmy-winning John Larroquette back as prosecutor, his iconic role of Dan Fielding. Melissa Rauch will co-star and co-executive produce. Incidentally, she was only slated to co-executive produce the series along with her husband, but she loved the script so much, the pilot script, she decided, I'm involved as a star. So once again, NBC giving thumbs up to a revival of Night Court, the famous series that ran a couple of decades ago, created by the late Reinhold Wiggy, ran 9 seasons with Harry Anderson as the star. It was all about a New York municipal court at night. And John Larroquette won several Emmy Awards for his role as prosecutor Dan Fielding, one of the more iconic legal comedy characters you'll ever see. And that is News Notes for today. More Tomorrow Be Televised coming away, but first some words from our fine sponsor, Audible.com. You know, Audible.com is the leading provider of spoken digital entertainment, information, and inspiration. And they just come out with a wonderful new audiobook based on a terrific new novel called Oracle by Andrew Piper. And it's about a government agent who is getting involved in a whole web of mystery. And the audiobook is narrated by the terrific actor Joshua Jackson. It's Oracle by Andrew Piper. And you can get it right now with a trial run with Audible.com. If you don't know, Audible is an organization that has over 200,000 titles, audio titles to choose from, and you can listen to them on any device, including whatever you're hearing us on right now at Blog Talk Radio, Spreaker, TuneIn Radio, all of our podcast destinations, and our website, tomorrowbetelevised.podsite.io. Remember, if you sign up at audibletrial.com/televised, you get one free audiobook, a one-month trial of the service, great customer service from Audible's parent, namely Amazon.com, and health and wellness information while it is available. Plus, if you're an Amazon Prime member, you get two audiobooks for the price of one or the trial of one, and one of those audiobooks could be your choice from the growing catalog of Audible Originals. We're talking original audio series for individual productions and podcasts, plus the best of Broadway, off-Broadway, and regional theater. Incidentally, don't forget, Tony Awards this Sunday night. First 2 hours on Paramount Plus, second two on CBS and Paramount Plus simultaneously. And you can also get great one woman and one man performances. So how about making this weekend or even later today a great opportunity to discover how Audible.com can transform the way you or someone you know hears the world. Like we say, great gift. Don't forget, not too early to think about the holidays, whether it's Halloween, Thanksgiving, or Christmas, Hanukkah, etc. So how about finding out more about AudibleTrial.com? Just go to audibletrial.com/televised. Audible.com, an Amazon company. You are hearing Tomorrow Be Televised. We are the program all about TV's current and future. Delighted to have you with us again. Thank you to David for being with us. Thank you to NBC for arranging the interview. And I know, as I said, we had to do it off the bat because he was only available the first 20 minutes. So thank you all for understanding. And if you have questions or comments for our next guest, give us a call, 646-652-2906, or use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. This is the third of three episodes we're doing this week, and as promised, we will have another trio of episodes coming your way next week, taking you out of September and into October. Coming up Monday on Tomorrow Be Televised, we'll kick it off with the creator and showrunners of a new BYU TV series, the workplace comedy called 9 Years to Neptune, Tyler and Peter McKellar. And we told you on our last episode that coming up next month, Vizio is launching a new network aimed at African Americans and other people of color. It's called Polaris. You will meet the founder and principal chairman of that service, former MTV executive and correspondent Raman J. Dukes. That's coming up on Monday. On Wednesday, we'll focus on The National Desk. That's the morning news program on many Sinclair-owned television stations that, starting next week, goes primetime. You will meet the director of content there, Michael Gerber. And finally, we have yet another 90-minute Tomorrow Be Televised show coming to you 1 week from today, and it is a goodie. First up, the creator and writer and executive producer of a show coming on HBO Max called 10-Year-Old Tom. Animator Steve DeVille will be with us. If the name sounds familiar, a number of years ago, he did a very popular late-night show on HBO called The Life and Times of Tim. He joins us first. Then, next month, Disney Channel kicks off the month, October 1st, with its 100th original movie. And it actually is a remake of the first Disney Channel movie called Under Wraps. You'll meet the writer-director of the remake, Alex Zamm. And finally, we'll introduce you to two podcasters, Lisa Trigger and Kara Klink, who love talking about Law & Order, and lately about Law & Order Special Victims Unit and Law & Order Organized Crime, which started their new seasons last night on NBC. Yeah, we have a lot of NBC stuff to talk about today, on a podcast called That's Messed Up. They'll both be with us in our final half hour. So be sure to be with us for a great 9 minutes coming your way to kick off October. That's a week from today, 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific, right here on Tomorrow Be Televised. Coming up our next half hour, you'll meet one of the key people in content at CuriosityStream, Rob Burke. We'll talk about where the current and future of CuriosityStream is all about, including a documentary special that premiered yesterday called Hevel. You'll meet Rob Burke after we pause at the bottom of the hour for web identification. You're connected to the best internet radio on the planet, www.blogtalkradio.com, Spreaker.com, and Tune.com. Together, reaching over 60 million listeners around the world every month and growing. Catch a special episode of Post Time with the Greek. Get a head start on your sports weekend tonight at 6 p.m. Eastern, 3 p.m. Pacific. The Greek will give us his thoughts on everything from the baseball run to the playoffs, the WNBA playoffs, the Ryder Cup golf tournament that started in England earlier today, plus all the latest action with college and pro football. That's Post Time with the Greek, special edition, special time tonight, 6 p.m. Eastern, 3 p.m. Pacific, only on Blog Talk Radio. And remember, best feature 24/7 at YouTube.com. Welcome back to our second half hour of this 90-minute edition of Tomorrow Be Televised. Signing up, I'm with you live from New York. Good to have you aboard. If you have a question or comment for our upcoming guests in the hour ahead, give us a call, 646-652-2906, or use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. And coming up later this half hour, toward the top of the hour, we've got our classic trivia question of the week, two prizes in play if you can come up with the correct answer. There have been, over the last few years, a lot of plumbing services that have come your way through smart TV sets and smart TV devices. And one of the first to do so, and do so successfully, is CuriosityStream. It was founded by the head of Discovery Channel and later Discovery Communications, John Henricks. And it has become one of the great destinations for plumbing with nature, science, history, and a whole lot more in the area of nonfiction. They've also turned public and doing very well on that financial score. And now they've got a lot of original content currently happening and soon to be happening. Well, joining us live to talk about what is happening current and future in the content side of CuriosityStream, the head of original content there, joining us live from Silver Spring, Maryland, Rob Burke. Rob, thanks for coming aboard.
Hey, Simon. Great to be here. Thanks so much for having me.
It's a pleasure to have you, Rob. What's it like to be part of a venture that originally nobody knew would this thing work on smart TV sets and smart TV devices as the sole distribution way to reach viewers? And now, look at you. You're one of the biggest in the category. You're a public company now, one of the first smart TV plumbing services to do so. And original content is now a main factor.
Oh, it's tremendously rewarding. I mean, personally, and for all of us here who believe in the value of really strong, you know, factual programming in science, nature, history, technology, you know, to see that it's something that does resonate. We've all believed that, you know, for ages. I've worked in television for a long time in factual, and to actually see it play out and know that there's a hunger out there for it, couldn't be happier. Yeah, it's a great time for it.
What do you think the hunger has been satisfied? What is CuriosityStream doing that is satisfying people?
You know, we're really trying to offer genuine, authentic, factual stories that satisfy human curiosity. We think that's something that's out there. It hasn't been satisfied in the market for quite a while now because, for one reason or another, a lot of traditional cable networks had migrated away from it into more reality-driven programming. And so, you know, we really thought that there was a really big void, actually, to fill, to just come with very true content that serves that demand. And you know, people really respond to it. They come away with real knowledge about the world, about their universe, the world they live in, that enriches their lives and that they can share and you know, it crosses all border lines and informs them about their daily lives.
Mm-hmm. Initially, CuriosityStream by nature was mostly acquired content. When did original content start to get aboard, and how is it now? What kind of role does it play? You know, what percent of the schedule or what people can see every month is original? How much of it is acquired from other sources?
Yeah, I mean, that's a complex question, but I will tell you, just like any service or you know, cable channel, when you start up, of course, you have to initially do a lot of acquisition to build your library. But as over time, as you can, you really try and take bigger and bigger swings in originals. We started early on. We had some short-form original content that we did and initially did quite a bit of that, but then quickly found, and the benefit of being a streamer, you can see what people gravitate toward. And we found that, you know, initially 3-minute pieces even were way too short. People wanted deeper dives, and they wanted us to fulfill that vision of deeper dives in programming. So over time, we offered more and more original programming. As you gain revenue and you're able to do more, you respond to viewers' demands for that by offering new and original content in addition to acquiring, you know, the best programming you can from all over the world. So that kind of that swap starts to grow, and you have more and more originals. Now we're to the point where we still have quite a bit of acquisition, of course, and we'll continue to look for the best programming out there. But we're also taking bigger and bigger swings. I think, you know, now we're to the point where we're commissioning more probably in the past year than we have since we began. So we're really ramping up, looking to offer great new content across the full spectrum of factual.
Mm-hmm. We're speaking with Rob Burke. He is the head of original content at CuriosityStream, which is one of the major smart TV programming services and one of the first also, I might add, too. But it's available on practically every smart TV set and smart TV device and some of the ones I'm sure that are coming out very soon, like Amazon's new set of TV sets and the new Comcast streaming stick that we had a news note about on our last show 48 hours ago. They will probably be on there too. And if you have a question or comment for Rob, give us a call, 646-652-2906. That's 646-652-2906. Or use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. You'll find it at the homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. By the way, coming up in our next half hour, in addition to our guests, we'll have our Friday feature takeaway of the week. And our takeaway this week is more ability for disability. We will explain. Rob, what are some of the originals? I want to get to a very important milestone for your network that took place last night. But first, tell us about some of the original shows that people are responding to.
Well, I mean, across the board, the shows that we really – that perform best for us are in the science, history, natural history genres. And typically, they actually cut across multiple genres at the same time. So programs about space, adventure, history – but that also have scientific angles to them, for instance, so a history show that tells a science story or vice versa. Those tend to perform for us extremely well. In the recent history, things like Haval, which I think we were going to talk about a little bit, is something that's a new, kind of broadening of our lens a bit. But also still carries a lot of those same components to it. So, while we're kind of broadening the aperture of our lens, as we sometimes say here, we're kind of staying true to brand, but bringing in more and more kind of cross-cutting genres as we expand.
Well, as you mentioned, last night your service premiered its first ever full-length documentary. It's called Haval?
Haval, yep, it's Haval. Kurdish for friend or comrade.
Mm-hmm. Got it. And it's a very unusual tale. It's very contemporary. It was produced by Jupiter Entertainment and Sky Studios. That, of course, is the content maker from Sky TV across the Atlantic. Talk about the origin of this special, because it's a very unusual bio. It's part a bio story, but it's also a part war story. And a part of history story.
That's right. The project was brought to us, like a lot of projects originate from some of our production partners, in this case, Jupiter Entertainment. And it was, I think, really started off of a profile piece that was written in the Washington Post, a tremendous profile piece on Michael Enright, and the fact that he had kind of given up everything he's a British-born but Hollywood actor here in the States. After 9/11, he was horrified with what he saw that day, and then what he saw later in Syria with the rise of ISIS and throughout the Middle East with ISIS, and he was impassioned to become a volunteer, soldier to serve alongside Kurdish forces in Syria, and try and help them in their efforts to take ISIS out of Syria. So it's really one of those complex stories that initially you might not think it would fit on a platform, but we believe it really does, because it has a lot of powerful elements to the story. I mean, Michael himself is a really compelling and complex character, but he becomes a vehicle to also tell a broader story about what happened in the Middle East, what happened in the war against ISIS, how did these volunteers get involved, and where did they come from? What did they do? And in Michael's case, he actually filmed, he was asked to film a lot of his tours there and covered it. So there was a lot of footage that we were able to use in the project, and you get a firsthand look at what that battle was like, and also all of the cultural and the emotional underpinnings of it, with the Kurdish people and learning about their plight and about the plight of these forces there in Syria. So really, at the end of the day, a complex story that cuts across a lot of genres for us. And we'll be interested to see how it does, because it does, as I say, kind of expand beyond not just the content side of things, but also format. We are doing some more of these feature doc-length projects as well.
Mm. How willing was Enright to be the subject of his own documentary?
I'm sorry, how willing was he?
How willing was he? Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I think he was quite willing. He did an extensive interview for the project. He's got a complex situation himself now because he's not been allowed back into the U.S. for, a variety of reasons. I think that, but he pleads the case, as you can see in the film, that he was, doing something that he thought would perhaps earn his right to come back into the U.S. But he's I think partly, interested in trying to, get his story out to the world, like the Kurdish people in a way. These stories they see as valuable vehicles to try and explain the situation and shine light on it.
Here's why I asked, does he see this special, which premiered last night, as his avenue to get back into the United States? And is there any sense in terms of why, whatever the force is, it's now allowing him to go back?
Yeah, I can't speak to Michael's intent and wouldn't want to, put words in his mouth, but I know from the content and from the film that at the end of the day, he believed that what he was doing would ultimately allow him a pathway back to the United States. As I understand, as the film ends, I don't want to, spoiler alert there, but his situation is still pending, and it has not been. He has not been admitted back into the U.S.
Yeah. I understand that in the course of this program that not only do we hear a lot about Enright, not only do we see his exploits, not only do we see the whole environment around him, but we also get the chance to hear who supports him and who also thinks the man is a son of a gun. What do his supporters say, and what do his detractors say about his decision to be in the thick of the battle against ISIS?
Yeah, I mean it's interesting, and I would encourage everyone to watch the film, of course, but to really see that and learn that for yourself, because it's a complex story, and you come away. I think everyone will walk away with their own conclusions about it. I think the film does an excellent job of portraying that in an accurate, unbiased way, meaning that we do share both sides of his story. From the viewpoint of, how I see Michael's story, he may not have fully understood how serious the situations he's getting into, but he was really motivated and really impassioned for reasons you'll learn about, I think, in the film, to try and stand up, as he calls it, against what he viewed as one of the biggest fundamental wrongs that he had seen in the history of, certainly in his lifetime and in our history. So he really felt he was doing something right. He stands up against bullies, and he felt that this was a supreme case of bullyism. You can view it from that standpoint and say, wow, this guy was doing a really, admirable, just thing in trying to go fight wrong and help people, and really help people, innocent people who didn't deserve this. But then the other side of it, there are critics who claim that, he was trying to maybe embellish his career or I don't know, try and just get publicity by taking on this role. Whether it's misguided or however you may view it, those are valid critiques. But I think the way that we presented it and using somewhat, objective middle people who are also looked at the story, I think you can walk away with good conclusions about it. Everybody can draw their own conclusions, but I think people will come away with a good sense of what's happened and what the real motivations were.
Yeah. One other question about this. At any point, did any government or did anyone approach the filmmakers and say, don't do this, don't cover this? If you do, you can count on us to bring you repercussions.
Not to my knowledge, but I'm not involved in direct production like that. I'm here at the network side, if you will, working with a production company. But no, not to my knowledge. And the forces involved, they were this was part of their working with Michael to film this and try and get their story out there. So yeah, I don't foresee any issue there.
Again, the special is called Havala. It premiered last night on Curiosity Stream, and of course, it is playing along with the rest of Curiosity Stream's content, available on most smart TV sets and smart TV devices. We are speaking with Rob Burke. He's the head of original content at the service. And if you have a question or comment for him in our remaining moments with him, give us a call, 646-652-2906, or use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. Again, coming your way on Monday, we'll begin the first of another three-episode week. We'll be back Monday, Wednesday, Friday at this very hour. And joining us for Monday, we'll have the creator and showrunners of the brand-new BYU television workplace comedy, 9 Years to Neptune, Tyler and Peter McKellar. And then, if you listened to us on Wednesday, when we had our shortened show, we told you in our news notes that Vizio, one of the new smart TV services they're going to be offering exclusively on their sets, at least the beginning, is a new network called Polaris. It's all about original content aimed at and produced by people of color, and more importantly, African Americans. You will meet the founder and principal chairman of this venture. He's been working at this for quite some time. His name is Robin J. Dukes. We'll have an exclusive interview with him in our second half hour. That's coming up Monday, 3 p.m. Eastern, New Pacific, right here exclusively on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. Rob, how much interest are you getting from producers, from show creators, from special creators about doing original content for you?
It's a great question. You know, we feel extremely fortunate that we have tremendous interest in working with us right now. We tend markets globally, but and people approach us directly as well. But there's a really strong interest out there from both American and international producers to work with us, you know, because of the type of content we offer. I think, you know, a lot of filmmakers also, this is their passion, and for a long time they didn't have a great platform to turn to come out with these great ideas. So there's, in some respects, there's almost a backlog of great ideas out there. And it's just so exciting. You know, I was just telling someone the other day that, like, I feel really fortunate to have been able to work in this industry and be working here now, because we do get to encounter just so many brilliant ideas for great new programming. And on top of that, we end up working with some of the just smartest people I've ever met in my entire life, just really knowledgeable people, both in the production community, and then all of the wonderful characters and experts that they bring into these projects from all over the world, from, you know, scientists, you name it. And it's just, it's incredible to see that again, like we were talking about earlier, that kind of groundswell of folks who are interested in approaching us, pitching us. We encourage everybody to do that because, you know, as we say, we are taking bigger and bigger swings. We're able to do that now, and we're really looking to cut through with new, original, cutting-edge science, history, natural history, and beyond that, you know, biopics, technology, some society and lifestyle programming, both series, one-offs, varying lengths. You know, it's a luxury in the streaming industry that we're able to not be beholden to clocks. But we are willing to take, you know, risks and try and take big swings for really exciting, cutting-edge content.
And when you say big swings, what kind of swings are we looking at? Let's say more these, like, 1-2-hour documentary specials, maybe a semi-scripted series or miniseries or a scripted series or made-for-TV movie. I don't know if you heard, but Discovery Channel announced recently that they're going to be launching their first holiday movie, which is going to be mm-hmm. grounded in a nature science history kind of field. We've had efforts by National Geographic to do semi-scripted, the Mars series that ran 2 seasons that involved Ethan mm-hmm. Morales. So what are we looking at in terms of the kind of swings you want to do?
Well, first I would say we don't really plan to go yet into scripted. I mean, that's just not really, you know, our DNA right now. But bigger series, returnable series, series that feature or one-offs that, you know, feature talent. You know, we're looking at trying to identify, you know, brand-level talent that we can have as well to help, you know, get ourselves further out there in the world and cut through. And some of these, you know, for instance, one of the big series we have coming up that we're really excited about is a project called Evolve. And it's a 6-part docuseries, you know, kind of exploring biomimicry. And it's filming around the world from beach house pictures in Singapore. And it explores how humanity can solve a lot of the fundamental issues facing us today by mimicking all of the innovations found in nature. And we're really excited about the host we have for that, a biologist and wildlife documentary filmmaker named Patrick R.E. And it's a big level production. It's a major international project for us that we think is really going to, you know, have a big impact. And so, you know, it could be anything from something like that to, long-running multi-part series that cuts more into the cultural zeitgeist, if we can find a formula that works right for that. So we're flexible and exploring, I would say, is a good way to determine.
Do you see a role for advertisers to either take a role in the production of a show, a program, or perhaps fund a program and fund it to an outside producer? Because it seems that more and more advertisers, whether it's Procter & Gamble or Unilever or General Motors, whatever, in this day of this incredible explosion of programming, especially through smart TV sets and smart TV devices and mega content services, that they want to be more involved in the production end of content.
Mm-hmm. It's an interesting and great question, and it's something we do look at. I mean, we still are ad free, and we're really proud of that right now. Our model has afforded us and is operating well as an ad free service. But it's a good question about how could you work deals that would involve brands or sponsors out there, and there may be ways to do that. I know in my past lives I've done things with, things like product integration and possibly doing side content that might be related to the program where the sponsor might be featured, indirectly in the program. We always want to maintain firm editorial control over projects and not have that, kind of editorial bent influenced in any way by sponsors. Perhaps there are models for that. I know there are others certainly exploring with that. But for now, it's been a fairly consistent play for the ad-free service. And we do have, mm-hmm. we do also have linear television channels, believe it or not, in certain markets around the world as well. It's not a huge initiative for us, but it's a big part of our business too. In certain markets, believe it or not, to have linear pay television. So, Curiosity as a service overall has grown across multiple platforms now, and that's another part of it as well.
Before you leave us, Rob, what are some other originals coming to Curiosity before the end of the year?
Gosh, we have a series I'm working on one right now called Underworld, which is exploring some of the grandest and hidden areas and caving basically around the world. The Secrets to Civilization is a beautiful series, really excited about that one. It's all about the rise and fall of many, extraordinary civilizations and how science is unearthing new clues about what actually happened to them. And then we have, some fun series like Faster that talks about ways that we thought we've gone about inventing tricks and tools to save a few minutes here and there in our daily lives, but in the end, it ends up changing our lives in mind-boggling ways that we never expected. And just, a whole bunch of things. We're going to be doing a follow-up series on the rescued chimpanzees of the Congo with Jane Goodall and others, some other feature docs I mentioned as well. But, there's just a whole raft of programming coming up that we're super excited about. I've never been a more exciting time for me. I've been here since the beginning, and now it's starting to see a lot of those fruits, kind of come to fruition.
Oh, and one other thing, because you're in touch with a lot of, I'm sure, filmmakers, video makers doing science, nature, history programming. Is there a sense that things are much better now than a year ago with the pandemic? With the coronavirus pandemic, that things are easing or trying to ease up so that we don't have major disruptions in terms of getting content made?
Yeah, I mean, that is an interesting – there is a sense that it's getting better. There were for a while some serious restrictions for travel, mainly, that caused some problems. But, you know, this is a creative bunch out here in the production world, and people really did figure out a lot of ways to get stuff done. And I was really impressed with how much the original program was able to be shot and delivered on time, on budget. And now we're seeing, I think, more and more of that coming about. There's, in some respects, you could say there's a boon of it coming, I think, because there was a little bit of a holdup there, and now people are really excited and eager to get back out and do more. So I think it is easing. I'm optimistic always.
Curiosity Stream. It's one of the first and very much one of the most successful smart TV services around. That means smart TV sets and smart devices. And if you have one, chances are you can catch Curiosity Stream right now. For more details about the service online, how you can get it, go to curiositystream.com. It's Curiosity Stream, all one phrase, .com. And Haval, one of the newest attractions on that service, premiered last night there. Rob Burke, head of virtual content at Curiosity Stream, joining us live from Silver Spring, Maryland. Rob, thank you so much for joining us. Congratulations to you and everybody on how your service has done so far. Hopefully many, many more great years of success ahead, more original content. And please give our best to John Henricks, one of the really great people in the history of TV programming. What he did with Discovery Channel, what he's doing now with your service and his followers is absolutely tremendous. And people should know more about John Henricks, a very, very special human being.
Absolutely, Simon. Thank you so much. I really enjoyed it.
Same here, Rob. Take care. Have a fantastic weekend.
You too. Bye-bye.
Rob Burke, head of original content at Curiosity Stream, joining us live from Silver Spring, Maryland, outside Washington, D.C. Now time for our Packet Trivia Question of the Week. The first correct answer, we got two prizes in play for you. The I Love Lucy Mix and Match Magnet Set and a wonderful star special from way back in the late 1990s called The Hollywood Christmas, narrated by Jane Seymour. A wonderful portrait of those great classic Hollywood movies. Both prizes can be yours if you know the answer to this question. Name the fictional area of Los Angeles where The Shield took place. Name the fictional area of Los Angeles where The Shield, remember that FX series starring Michael Chiklis, the rogue cop, Vic Mackey? Well, it took place in the fictional area of L.A. We want to know what it is. If you know the answer, email me, simonapple04@yahoo.com. It's simonapple04@yahoo.com. Don't forget to enclose your name and your email and your mailing address when you get it in. And if you're first with the answer, you win both prizes. If we don't get a winner by the end of today, we'll post the question first thing Saturday morning, if we need to, all weekend, at our social media sites on Facebook and Twitter. Facebook at Simon Applebaum and Twitter at UBC Simon TWBT. That's Facebook Simon Applebaum and Twitter at UBC Simon TWBT. Remember, in order to win, you got to play in, so do so, and all the very best. You are listening to Tomorrow Be Televised, the promo about TV's current and future, now in year 15, month number 2. Happy to have you aboard. Simon Applebaum with you live from New Haven, York. And if you have a question or comment for our upcoming guest at the top of the hour, give us a call, 646-652-2906, or use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. We have another big 90-minute show coming your way a week from today. We kick it off with the creator, writer, and executive producer of the new HBO Max animated show, 10-year-old Tom, Steve Zillion. If the name is familiar, he did a show for HBO, a late-night show, a number of years ago called The Life and Times of Tim. I think you'll enjoy meeting Steve very much. And then Disney Channel marks 100 original movies next month, October 1st to be exact, with Under Wraps. It will premiere next Friday. We'll have the writer and director of Under Wraps, which was the first Disney Channel original movie, so this is a remake. Alex Zam will join us. And finally, if you caught last night's season premieres of Law & Order Special Victims Unit or Law & Order Organized Crime, join the conversation in our final half hour with two podcasts who love talking about everything Law & Order. The podcast they do is called That's Messed Up, very popular. We'll speak with Liza Traeger and Kara Klenk. That's Liza Traeger and Kara Klenk from the L&O popular podcast That's Messed Up. They'll be with us in our final half hour of our 90-minute episode next Friday, 3 p.m. Eastern, New Pacific, right here on Tomorrow Be Televised. When we come back, there's a new smart TV distributed network about the world of the paranormal. It's called Haunt TV. That's Haunt TV. You'll meet the former vice president of it, Craig Jenner, who joins us live from Toronto, up north, after we pause the top of the hour for web identification. This is www.blogtalkradio.com, speaker.com, tune.com. Together we reach over 60 million listeners around the world every month and growing. Speaking of things haunted and eerie, check out Eerie House Radio, the best of those suspense, escape, great old Inner Sanctum, old-time radio shows, radio dramas, Check it out tonight, 8:30 p.m. Eastern, 5:30 Pacific. You'll never get more eerie than Eerie House Radio, the best of all-time suspenseful radio drama. Tonight, 8:30 p.m. Eastern, 5:30 Pacific, right here on Blog Talk Radio. And remember, best VTR 24/7, YouTube.com. Welcome back to our final half hour of this 90-minute Friday edition of Tomorrow Be Televised. Simon Albom with you again live from New Ever York. And if you have a question or comment for our final guest coming up, give us a call, 646-652-2906. That's 646-652-2906. Numbers get anywhere you're catching us across the country, around the globe, here on Blog Talk Radio, Speaker Tune Radio. Don't forget our chat room. If you don't like the phone, use the room. Simon Apple 04 by name. You'll find it at the homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. And don't forget, you can connect to others anytime you like by using Facebook Timeline. Have them in the conversation. What you got to do is follow the instructions on your Blog Talk Radio Tune and Speaker screen, and other things will be live with you and with us. Also coming up later this half hour, our Friday feature, the takeaway of the week. This time out, it's more ability for disability. We will explain again later in this half hour. As you know, if you're a regular listener to this program, we have done a lot of concentrating over the last couple of years about new programming services available exclusively on smart TV sets and smart TV devices. And yes, we've got another exclusive service for you. This time, it's a smart TV set and device service that currently is only available on the Roku channel. It's all about the world of paranormal. It's called Haunt, H-A-U-N-T, TV. Joining us live from up north, Toronto, Canada, is the programming vice president of the service, Craig Jenner. Craig, thank you for coming aboard. Craig, you're on. Hang on. Let's see. There we go. Craig, there. Welcome in.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me on, Simon. It's great to be here to talk about our latest channel, Haunt TV.
Yeah, explain that, because you're with a company called Blue Ant Media, and in fact, this is not the first time you've entered the unique world, like say, of smart TV sets and smart devices.
No, it's certainly not. You know, Blue Ant's got its roots kind of in factual and lifestyle content, and so we have a sister channel called Love Nature, which that's another fast service that's available throughout the U.S. and other territories around the world. And we run a suite of good old-fashioned cable channels up in Canada, and one of which has dabbled in paranormal content for years. And as we've watched the evolving fast market in the U.S., the free ad-supported television, streaming television, it seemed like the perfect opportunity to bring this niche of paranormal to the U.S. market.
Why do you think this is going to work? What about the subject matter do you think is going to interest viewers? And let's not forget, you also have some competition, because Travel Channel has over the last year or two turned from being a network here in the United States about pure travel to more of a ghost adventures paranormal service all its own.
Yeah, it's funny you mentioned the Travel Network. We actually share similar roots with them in a lot of ways. About 10 years ago up here in Canada, we relaunched a channel called Travel and Escape. And very similar, we had some paranormal stuff on the service. And it was head and shoulders from an audience standpoint compared to all the other content on the channel. And, you know, you can imagine the internal debates as we had launched this travel channel, and that was the niche that we were trying to play in. But we watched viewers just gravitate to this other thing that we were doing. And over the years, we have absolutely leaned into this space. You know, our channel at this point is called T&E. We kind of KFC'd it, if you will, and dropped the travel and leaned heavily into this space. We know this space resonates with viewers. We keep a close eye on what our friends at the Travel Channel in the U.S. are doing. We've done a number of co-pros with them over the years. It's a great space, and similar to what your guest before was talking about in the Curiosity Stream space, it's also a niche that has been largely abandoned by the big cable channels in the U.S., and we think FAST lends itself incredibly well to this environment, clear niches, clear as to what this service is. And so that's one of the reasons that we think and hope it's going to work. We know this content does resonate with viewers. The other thing is just in the ethos, certainly, and I do want to draw the distinction here, but certainly horror movies as a genre have had quite a resurgence as of late. Now, this is a different channel. This is not slashers. This is not, you know, people being dismembered, but it does share a lot of DNA with things like Paranormal Activity, The Conjuring, The Ring. I guess the point of difference is, you know, we're dealing more with ghost investigators and really stories that people are, you know, telling from a first-person standpoint through recreations. It's done incredibly well up here in Canada, and we're already seeing really good, solid growth since our first month of launch. We've seen about a 60%+ uptick in time spent and people watching just in the first month alone. So we're really bullish with what we think the future is for this service.
Yeah. When some people think of the – oh, by the way, Duck Northwest Media just joined us in our chat room. Hello. Thanks for coming aboard. You have a question or a comment for our guest, Craig Junior, put in the room and give us a call, 646-652-2900. And by the way, welcome to those of you just joining us at the top of the hour. We are very happy to have you aboard on our 90-minute edition coming your way this Friday afternoon. Craig, when some people think of paranormal programming, they think of the search for who's haunting a house, where the ghosts and the witches and the goblins are. Some people think of paranormal as psychic phenomena because they may have seen a classic television series like One Step Beyond, maybe a newer series in terms of scripted drama like The Sixth Sense. How does Haunt TV define paranormal?
That's a great question. It's one that comes up a lot. Certainly, Haunt does very exclusively play in the world of ghosts. We don't do UFO stuff, which tends to be more of a male audience anyways. The paranormal content does tend to skew more female. We do dabble a little bit in the crazy world of cryptids. So if you're getting into kind of some of the more mysterious monsters out there, we do a little bit in that space. Really, our primary focus is those actual ghost stories, real-life hauntings, and experiences that people have had with the unexplained.
How long has Haunt TV been the works for, and how did you get the breakthrough with Roku Channel here in the United States?
I'm sorry, what was the first part of the question?
How long have you been at work and Blue Amp been at work designing, you know, putting together Haunt TV, putting together the programming, and how did the deal with the Roku channel come along?
Oh, sure. Yeah, happy to talk about that. So I would say that certainly Blue Ant has had its eyes on, you know, the SVOD space, the AVOD space, the FAST space. You know, we're not only a broadcaster, we're a distributor, we're a producer. We have been really looking at where our strength lies, the sort of genres that we're producing in, and how do we bring those to life in the new places that people are watching content. And so whether it be through SVOD or FAST, certain genres are going to have more success in different spaces. Launching a channel into an SVOD environment today is a really tough ask if you're not somebody like Disney or Discovery. It's tough to get people to open up their wallet. When you have three or four of these services already, it's tough to justify adding yet another one to that space. So naturally for us, we thought that Haunt really lends itself to that to the FAST space. You know, it's good old-fashioned lean-back TV, and we like to say that it leaves you on the edge of your seat. But it's certainly just we think it definitely fits in that environment. The other piece I'd say in terms of Roku, like Haunt is something that we actually launched up here in Canada back in December. It was our first FAST channel here in Canada. We launched with Roku first up here, and it was really based on the success and growth that we've seen on the channel here in Canada that really helped springboard our launch into the U.S. Last month.
And by the way, for those who don't know the term, the acronym FAST stands for Free Ad-Supported Media, or Free Ad-Supported Channel or Television. FAST, F-A-S-T.
Yep. Just us TV guys love our acronyms.
Yes, some do too. And we always have to explain it for the viewers out there, just in case. But they're getting wise. They're getting wise to that particular term, FAST, because it's popping up all over the smart TV set and device world. We are speaking with Craig Junior. He is the Prime Vice President of one of the newest smart TV services around, the paranormal Haunt TV. So far, you can only get on the Roku channel here in the United States and Canada, although in Canada, you can also get on smart TV sets from Samsung. We'll talk more later on about how fast the rollout is going to go with the rest of the smart TV set and device world here in the United States and elsewhere in a bit. If you have a question or comment for Greg, give us a call, 646-652-2906, or use our chat room, SimonApple04, by name Duck Northwest Media. Stepped out of the room. Hopefully, he'll come back and maybe give us a question shortly. Don't forget, 3-episode week coming away, second week in a row, next week. That's Monday, Wednesday, Friday. Coming up next Wednesday, next week, the National Desk, that is the morning news program you can find on many Sinclair-owned broadcast stations all around the U.S. of A., is now going prime time and a little bit of late night starting next week. So we'll have the director of content, Michael Garber, will join us to talk about how that expansion is going starting next week. Again, that'll be on Sinclair affiliates, usually with the CW and My Network TV, because the evening program will go on from 10 p.m. to midnight Eastern time. And, of course, figure out the time zones depending on where you are. Michael Garber from the National Desk from Sinclair. He's our lead guest Wednesday, 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific, right here on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. Craig, let's talk about some of the individual shows that are on Haunt TV. One I find very interesting is called Paranormal Survivor. Explain what that's all about.
Sure, be happy to. Paranormal Survivor is really about people retelling these incredible events that that they've gone through in their life. So it is that first-person recreation type series. You know, you can debate whether ghosts are real or not. I know that's probably not the topic for today, but certainly, you know, you're sitting there and you're listening to a lot of these people talk about the experiences they've had. It's really clear to you that they actually have experienced something. You know, the question mark certainly is, what is it really that they've experienced at the end of the day? But they believe they've gone through something that's been incredibly traumatic. And that's one of the strengths of the series, Paranormal Survivor. It really brings that to the forefront and recreates it in kind of the hair standing up on the back of your neck type way.
What does it take, by the way, Craig, what does it take to do these recreated segments, which are somewhat scripted, I would think? How long does it take to do them? How do you do them?
That's a tough one for me to answer directly. I know from a production standpoint, obviously what we're doing is we're sitting down with the person that went through the encounter and then trying to bring that back to life in the most realistic way possible. In terms of timing, I couldn't tell you how long an individual shoot would take. It would really depend on a whole bunch of variables, where it took place, how involved the story was, if it was a reoccurring haunting or a one-off experience. There's a lot of variability there.
Mm-hmm. Mm. Understand. Another show that you have is called I love the title, My Worst Nightmare. And it's all about how people deal with nightmares that are not only very real, but they pop up over and over and over and over and over again. I think of, if you remember The Twilight Zone, one of the great first season episodes by the late incredible writer Charles Beaumont was called Perchance to Dream, about someone who had a heart condition, played by Richard Conte, dealing with a nightmare that came on over and over and over again. Talk about that show and what kind of viewer reaction you've had to that.
Yeah, that's a great series. In fact, one that is actually having its U.S. premiere on Haunt TV. It was one of the things we produced it up here in Canada, and we're actually able to bring it exclusively to the service in the U.S. So, A, we're excited. We're incredibly excited about that. B, it is such a great twist on, you know, what a traditional paranormal series would be, because it does look at that experience that many of us have had with that dream that recurs over and over again. But it does it through the lens of people that are experiencing a reoccurring dream that is not pleasant in any way and actually feels incredibly real to them. And so through the recreation process, we try and essentially bring that dream to life so that viewers can take that same ride that unfortunate person is experiencing night after night.
Do the subjects find that this is a way to get closure?
It certainly has been helpful for a number of people that have been on the series, just being able to, you know, I think one of the things that is a real strength for us here at Blue Ant and at Haunt is just how serious we treat these topics. You know, the people that are coming forward with these stories often feel embarrassed to do so, that they've gone through something that no one's going to potentially believe them about. And I think just sharing and telling your story is a way of, you know, letting go, or at least, you know, coming to terms with what's happened to you. Even though you may never have all the answers as to what you've experienced, sharing it certainly is a form of release.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. What are some of the other original series that you have on Haunt?
We've got a great series called Ghostly Encounters, another one called Haunting Australia, which, again, that's a first run in the territory as well. That's more of your traditional ghost hunting group that goes in and investigates where people have experienced specific hauntings. And, you know, you kind of go through that Scooby-Doo type investigation with the team. We've got another one called Occult Crimes, which kind of blends true crime and the paranormal together. That's a great combination to bring together, just given how hot true crime is. And a lot of it, too, is just, you know, we're at the point, the channel's launched a month ago. we're keeping really close tabs on what's working. We're in a position that we're going to double down and lean further into what viewers are responding to. So there's going to be a lot of continued additions to the channel. We've got some great stunts on the horizon as well. Tomorrow, if you don't know, is apparently International Ghost Hunting Day. So mark your calendars. We've got a stunt for that tomorrow. And, of course, Halloween in the month of October is right around the corner. You know, one of the great things with this service is it's actually run by the exact same group that's running our cable channels. So it has all the same curated feel, the stunts, the special events that you'd be used to on you know, traditional cable TV.
We are learning about Haunt TV. It's the brand new programming service available on the Roku channel, which is available in both the United States and in Canada, where we find our guest in Toronto, Craig Jonah, the programming vice president of Haunt TV, because Haunt TV is run by Blue Ant Media, a fast-growing programming venture that is based in Canada, in Toronto specifically. And if you have a question or comment in our many minutes with Craig, give us a call, 646-652-2906, or use that chat room, SimonApple04 by name. And coming up shortly, we'll have our regular Friday feature, the takeaway of the week, which today is subtitled More Ability for Disability. We'll tell you about three important stories, developments that took place this week by different cable, different programmers, and why I think there's an Applebaum out there that may be very happy about it, as well as a community of disabled people who I also think should rejoice about this too. So more about that coming up. Craig, what is any new premieres that are going to be coming on your service between now and the end of the year?
There certainly will be. I'm not in a position. There's some deals that are still pending, so there's nothing specific that I can talk about in terms of stuff that'll be hitting specifically in that window yet. Coming weeks, certainly more to announce and more to be talking about.
And what about expanding in the United States beyond the Roku channel? When will the other smart TV device makers, other smart TV set makers, be able to get your network and distribute it?
Yeah, absolutely. This is the time that, you know, I'd love to make the old pitch of, you know, pick up the phone and call your cable or satellite provider and ask them to carry this carry Haunt TV. You know, the reality is we're in active talks with all of the key providers today. Haunt is up, running, ready to go. And so we are working to bring Haunt to all those other platforms in the U.S.
By the way, is your service ad-supported? And if so, what's been the early reaction among advertisers?
It is ad-supported. That is one of the kind of key pieces of fast television. So there is an ad component to it. Now, one of the nice things is it's a lesser load than you would traditionally experience, so you don't have 12, 14 minutes of commercials per hour. And so far, the acceptance has been really good. We've seen positive numbers. The numbers keep growing. And it kind of brings a nice balance. It, you know, you're not sitting through a 14-minute ad load. You're really sitting through 6 minutes-ish an hour, depending on the platform. And we've created a whole bunch of short-form content as well to go in and around the programming, so it feels like a much more entertaining hour than if you were watching lots of commercials.
Mm. By the way, are you starting to get advertisers on the Roku? I know Roku has been making a huge push for advertising the last year or so, especially since their upfront event, Digital Continuity Front event back in May. Are you finding that you're starting to get into some advertisers here in the United States for the U.S., the Roku channel side of things? And also, are there certain advertisers or product categories that are more prone to advertising in this kind of fair?
Yeah, I don't know if there's any that are specifically more prone to this specific genre. It tends to be more profile-based, and being a fairly female-skewed service, that's a very popular demo for advertisers. So certainly from that standpoint, it checks a lot of boxes for what media buyers are looking for. In terms of, you know, speaking to Roku's success in terms of how they monetize their ads and what their demand is, I really can't speak on that behalf. I can certainly say that we've seen some nice demand for the channel. You know, we're continuing to see that growth, and it's on a great path.
Mm. Before we go, I mentioned psychic phenomena, which is a part of the paranormal experience, whether it is poltergeist or teleportation, things like that. I was a big fan of One Step Beyond, the iconic psychic phenomena series from John Newland that ran 3 seasons on ABC. He tried to revive the show in syndication in the 1970s. It didn't work because the show was on videotape, did not have a sponsor, bad budget, all sorts of reasons why. And I'm wondering whether maybe Haunt TV, I'm sort of throwing this out of the blue, that Haunt TV could be a possible place to do a revival of One Step Beyond, given developments in psychic phenomena and the paranormal since John Newman did that series back in the late 1950s, early 1960s.
Yeah, I think that's a great idea. You know, I look at Haunt TV, and, you know, what we don't want is just a giant pile of you know, paranormal recreation shows. I think it's important to branch out. I think it's important to have multiple legs under the table, if you will, under that still greater paranormal genre. But how can you do those little twists or find those different stories that you can bring to the table? And something like that would be a great concept to try and reboot on the service. Certainly that's our hope, that as this channel grows, as well with the sister channel in Canada, T&E, that we can actually really start to ramp up production beyond what we've done in the past. You know, typically we'll do maybe 50 hours on the high end of paranormal a year that we produce ourselves, and we've acquired a bunch to launch the channel. But, you know, the end game here is certainly to be producing on the back of Haunt and our businesses here in Canada. So short answer is, yeah, we'd absolutely love to look at that idea.
I'll tell you, I think it's crying out for a revival. I really do. Like I said, when Newman tried to revive it with his colleagues on the original series, they had a lot of problems in terms of budgets and so forth. They had to redo scripts from the original series, didn't work. And given, as I said, all the developments and I'm sure all the case histories and psychic phenomena that are now around, and I'm sure new forms of that phenomena, that the time is right to bring it back. And maybe Haunt TV could do it, maybe somebody else could do it, but I'd love to see it. Also, Sixth Sense, which I thought was a great idea on ABC back in the early 70s, and Universal TV unfortunately screwed the show up, and it did not go the way it really could have gone. So that's another show, dealing with ESP, extrasensory perception, with Gary Collins, that I think could use a revival. But that's me. And maybe Haunt TV can do it. We will see. Again, Haunt TV is available now on the Roku channel in the United States and Canada, also on Samsung TV Plus in Canada as well, and hopefully it will come on other smart TV sets and devices in both countries soon. For more details about the service online, here is where you go, www.haunttv.ca. That's because the service originates in Canada, www.haunttv.ca. And, of course, if there are interesting new shows coming on the channel, we're very happy to have the producers of those shows on this program. Craig Jenner, the Program Vice President of Haunt TV, thank you again for joining us. Congratulations on getting the service off the ground here in the United States, and hopefully much, much more from not only the service, but also its parent, Blue Ant Media, in the months and years to come.
Great. Thank you so much, Simon. Have yourself a great weekend.
You too. The very, very best. Thanks again for coming on. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you. Take care.
You too. Craig Jenner, Program Vice President of Haunt TV, joining us live from Toronto, Canada. Now time for our regular Friday feature, the takeaway of the week, the developments that took place this week that you should care about because they will impact the future of television. We started this program with David Applebaum, no relation in spelling or relationship, one of the co-showrunners of the new NBC drama La Brea, which again is premiering next Tuesday night, 9:30 Pacific time. There's another Applebaum out there that is also no relation to me that we had on this program several years ago. Her name is Lauren Applebaum, and she is a person very much involved as an advocate in trying to encourage more programming which has people with disabilities in front of or behind the camera, whether it's people who are blind, low vision, deaf, hard of hearing, loss of limbs, etc., to give them a shot both in front of and behind the camera. Well, we call our takeaway of the week this week more ability for disability, because three developments happened this week that I think Lauren Applebaum and her organization called Respectability, which I said we had in our program a couple of years ago, I think are very, very happy about. Because it looks like the Hollywood, the U.S. production community is now realizing that, hey, like other aspects of diversity involving people of color, the gay and lesbian community, that, yes, people who are disabled, which are millions across the country and around the world, they deserve their shot in front of and behind the camera. And rather than be one show here, then maybe one show there, and et cetera, et cetera. We're now starting to see numerous multiple projects start to happen. Three of them came to mind this week. First, as we report on our show, I believe it's either Monday or Wednesday, Hallmark Channel is going to have a movie, a Christmas movie called The Christmas Bond. It's being put together by its star and executive producer, Holly Robinson Pete, who in real life raises an autistic child. Well, the person who will in this plot is about a parent and the autistic child she raises and how they spend a Christmas. Well, the actor who is going to be playing the autistic role is an autistic actor, and he will be involved. That's development number one. Then, on development number two, Netflix, which has been a very, very big week for them, given all the Emmy Awards they won last Sunday night, announced that they're going to be launching a miniseries based on a Pulitzer Prize novel from 2015 called All the Light We Cannot See. The protagonist of this miniseries is a blind or low vision woman. Well, Netflix put themselves on the hook in saying, rather than have an actor who may or may not be sighted, we're going to have, and we promise this, we're going to have a woman who is blind or low vision act out that lead role. And in fact, they're going to be launching a global service with Sean Levy, the Stranger Things producer, who is also putting this miniseries together, that they're going to have a global search. So they put themselves on the hook and said, yes, this has happened. And finally, yesterday, XTX Television, that's the TV division of XTX Films, the independent film distributor, announced that they are launching a project called Team Chocolate. It is based on an award-winning series from Belgium about a chocolate factory worker who has Down syndrome, and he falls in love with somebody. He also works at a plant where his immediate colleagues are also people of various disabilities. And when his girlfriend decides to pack up and leave elsewhere, he follows with some of the people from his workplace team. The show has gotten rave reviews for how it treats disabled people, both in front of and behind the camera. And XTX has agreed with Real One Entertainment to put this an English language version of the show together and to do it the same way and make sure that they cast people, again, as actors, as producers, writers, directors, who are from the disabled community. By the way, this reminds me, in a way, of Life Goes On. Remember that series from years ago with Patti LuPone, which had a breakthrough in terms of its co-star, Chris Burke, who has Down syndrome, and in fact was in a plot line where he falls in love with somebody who has Down syndrome. A great, great breakthrough. I'm sure that shows in reruns somewhere. Anyway, they have all three developments, Christmas Bond, All the Light We Cannot See, and Team Chocolate. It goes to show you that maybe at long last, the disabled community is finally getting its place in the sun, a lasting place in the sun. Let's hope so. And we're also going to try to get Lauren Applebaum on our program in the next couple of weeks to get her reaction to all of this activity and more. Thanks to all of our guests for being with us today. Thank all of you for tuning in. Don't forget, Monday, got a big hour for you. The Cleveland Show is the 9 years to Neptune and the founder of Polaris, Rothman J. Dukas. The Game of the Landscapes program, want to catch up an episode you missed, go to the homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. Check out our podcast this weekend on all of our different destinations, including Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music, Verbal, the iRadio Podcast Network, and Reason. And we'd love to hear from you, so email me, simonapple04@yahoo.com. Find me on Facebook, LinkedIn, and Twitter. We do respond in 24 hours. Why? Because what you say matters now more than ever. The views expressed here are those of the participants. They are not necessarily those of Blog Talk Radio that distributes this program. Andy Toews, Blog Talk Radio's general manager, Dave Sonnenberg, is head of content. Website maintenance is provided by PodSite, the Internet's new podcast destination. For more, go to podsite.io. Our web coordinator is guitarist Bakers. Tomorrow we televised is brought to you by Audible.com, the audio marketplace of Amazon.com. Audible transforms the way you hear the world. For a free audiobook or two, it's audibletrial.com/televised. But tomorrow we televised, I'm Simon Applebaum in New York. Thank you for listening. Have a fantastic weekend. Back with you on Monday, you know where, 3 p.m. Eastern Pacific on Blog Talk Radio, Speaker Tune Radio, and all of our podcast destinations. Whatever you're up to now and then, please make it safe and make it great. If you haven't been vaccinated, see your doctor. Find out what your medical history is, and then make a great choice. Until the next time, stay well and stay tuned.